The problem is that you really can't get paid to raise capital and then kind of just keep on moving on to the next operator, the next deal, and kind of speed date your way to success. It's a felony, and the SEC and the feds will come after you, right? Because you have to have what's called a material participation in the general partnership. You have to be doing something.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
For those of you who didn't join us for episode number 59 in the show, which I can't believe it was just earlier this year, we had episode number 59. We've got our guest, Tim Lyons, here with us today. I don't know what episode this will be, Tim, somewhere in the 400 range. So it's a lot of fun.
Whoa, that's crazy, man. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's fun to have a repeat guest on the show. I've not had too many of those. So it's fun to kind of hear almost a year later, because your episode 59 went live on January 27th of this year. And so you'll be, when this goes live, it'll be January of 2022 when we get out there. For those of you that don't know Tim, he's a 16-year veteran in the New York City Fire Department. Also raises a heck of a lot of capital and has had just explosive growth in the multifamily sector here in the last 12 to 18 months. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Sam, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. I mean, give us just a quick rundown. What is the last year? Again, by the time this goes live, it'll be almost a year from show to show. So tell us what's happened in the last 12 months in your business. What decisions have you made? And maybe give us the breakdown as to why.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you heard the first episode, I was stuck in the W-2 grind. I was a New York City firefighter, ER nurse, working a ton, three little girls under the age of 10, and something had to change, right? I was trading time for money. I wanted to get into real estate. I wasn't sure how. I bought a three-family property, which we just sold in 24 months and doubled our investment, trying to take advantage of the market a little bit and free up some capital. But you know what? I wanted to get into multifamily, right? So I needed to find out how. I went ahead and I got educated, self-education, number one, but also I went into a mentorship coaching program. And that really collapsed the time frame for me in a big way. And I highly recommend everybody do that. With that being said, I was surrounded by a ton of great people, and the networking opportunities just really helped us grow. So that was one thing. Number two was putting in systems. Working on back-end office stuff, automations, emails, content creation, being a guest on podcasts, telling people what it was that I was doing, along with my brother Greg, who was my business partner. That was the biggest catalyst for us and to be more active on social media, because let's be honest, a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to get to the bottom of their feet on their phones, right? So just by doing that, it led to a lot of organic conversations about what is it that you guys do? How can it help me? And that's really where our unique selling proposition came about, right? Our value, Cityside Capital. When people have capital to invest, right? They may not know where to go, who to trust. How do you vet a deal? How do you vet a sponsor? What is a syndication even? So even this really highly educated people with good amount of capital, they just never heard of it, or they don't understand how it works. And that's what we've been doing over the last 12 months, is really going all in on education, having a ton of phone calls, letting people know what it is that we're doing and how they can be involved.
Right. That's fantastic. I know you've taken some other steps that some people have not taken in the capital raising side. I'd love to spend the bulk of this show, if we can, kind of talking about your thinking around why you became a registered representative of a broker dealer. I know there's some pros and some cons to that. So let's just jump right into that side of things and tell us what it is, first of all, and then why did you do it?
It is a mouthful, right? Registered representative of a broker dealer. Sounds almost intimidating. Commercial real estate, multifamily real estate, syndications, it's a team sport. And Greg and I had to find out what our value was to the team. And in the beginning, when we partnered on our first three deals, we were kind of newer, right? So we weren't going to be the boots on the ground because we didn't live in the areas. We weren't going to be the asset managers because we were brand new, right? But we were able to kind of align ourselves in these partnerships. And what we found was that we could raise some money. And I think it's a function of growing up in the New York City area and just having our network the way it is. So we were blessed that way. The problem is that you really can't get paid to raise capital and then kind of just keep on moving on to the next operator, the next deal, and kind of speed date your way to success. It's a felony, and the SEC and the feds will come after you, right? Because you have to have what's called a material participation in the general partnership. You have to be doing something. There's many ways to skin the cat. But Greg and I, once we figured out that capital raising was probably going to be our strong suit, we wanted to figure out how can we do that in the best way, the most legal way, so that we can sleep at night. And so that's what we did. So we ended up being connected with a multifamily syndication broker dealer. And there's not many of those out there, but it was almost like too good to be true for Greg and I, because it kind of came at the right moment. And it's funny how those things work out. So when we got connected, basically the process was we had to take three exams, the Series 82, the Series 63, and something called the Securities Industries Essentials Exam, the SIE. And you can take the SIE, anybody can take the SIE. The next two, you have to be sponsored by the broker dealer to take those exams. But once you have those exams, and basically the 82 is all about direct participation in private placements, which a syndication, that's the definition of a syndication. So we were able to quote unquote sell securities because we had these licenses. The value for us and our investors was that we were able to align ourselves with 9, now 10 multifamily and self-storage syndicators that were experienced in their spaces and had gone full cycle on deals, had a whole system, and some of them are vertically integrated. So we were able to kind of join them in their deals by bringing the equity in the way that we can be compensated for it. In the process, we're able to maintain position in the general partnership and get the equity on the back end. So it was kind of like a win-win situation. And I'll throw it back to you, see if you have any questions.
Do you have to disclose to your investors that you are becoming part of the general partnership as well?
So it's in the subscription docs. If the lead syndicator, the lead operator, they may use a third-party company like ours, you know, our platform, to raise equity because they have to disclose where the equity comes from, whether it's a 506B or C, right? And then they have to disclose that they might be paying a commission to a company like ours. So it's all in there. And the reason, because I get a lot of questions, why do operators go to somebody like you guys for equity? How come they don't go to a big hedge fund or a private equity or a pref equity or family office? And the reason is that sometimes syndicators can lose autonomy in their deal, right? If they work with a family office or a pref equity group, those type of entities, sometimes they want to come in as a JV. They don't want to come in as a limited partner. And then if they're coming in as a JV, they want to have some voting rights and some responsibilities, and they want maybe a 2-year lockout or a 3-year lockout period where you can't refi them out. That's kind of like our value, is that we just bring investors to the table and we don't require any of those hurdles.
Yeah, that makes a heck of a lot of sense from the general partnership raising capital side. I guess for those of us who are in, and not saying you're not in real estate, because clearly you're in real estate, but it's almost like you're shifting the business model somewhat, in the sense that our trajectory is to go, hey, we're going to go buy more assets and buy more actual real estate. Is it moving for you, or does the business objective somehow change where now it's, okay, we're not going to go buy real estate, we're just going to raise capital? I guess, does that question even make sense?
Yeah. I mean, so I think it falls back to the team sport mentality, right? I mean, I think coming into this business, we didn't have that. We wanted to do everything ourselves. We wanted to underwrite, get the property under contract, run the property, pick out our own property management company, do all the things. And then when we realized the power of syndication and aligning ourselves with great operators, I think we made that pivot to what's our superpower kind of. And now we can collect real estate, these large 100, 200, 300 unit deals. And we get to do what we love best, which is talk to investors, raise capital, keep them informed, answer questions, look for new deals, underwrite new deals. So it's something that just suits us the way we are. Also, because Greg and I are still W-2 workers, right? I still work in the firehouse and Greg still works in the health and fitness industry, although I keep on trying to get him to go all in on Cityside Capital, but we'll see what happens.
Some more nuanced questions for you. What are the costs? Because you guys are working for a broker dealer. They have some expenses for maintaining that broker dealer status. Any idea what that is? First question. And second question is, let's say you go out and you raise $5 million for a deal. How much of your cut for raising that money goes to the broker dealer?
Yeah. So a great question. So there's obviously a cost of capital for the operators that we work with. There's like a standard type of fee. So call it 3% of capital raised. That would be the commission for the registered reps. Then there's a split with the broker dealer. That's upfront. That's like your acquisition fee. We just got to call it a commission. And then on the back end, the equity on the back end, it's a formula based upon capital placed, which will basically be your equity in the deal on the back end.
Right. But what about the splits that you have? Maybe you can speak in more general terms. What's an industry standard split for, again, we'll use the $5 million example. You raise $5 million, you get 150 grand in commission. Is it 80-20? Is it 70-30? 50-50? What's the ratio between you? I'm just asking for anybody that's considering this, how they have to think about this long-term. What's the split between you and your broker-dealer?
Yeah, I mean, so I can only talk about what we're doing, and it's 80-20. I think that's pretty fair and probably pretty standard across the broker-dealers across the country. So call it 3% of capital placed, and then you get 80% of that, 20% going to the broker-dealer. And it's the same thing on the back end, 80-20 on the back end.
Got it. And then I guess the follow-up question to that is, do you have any idea what it costs to maintain that broker-dealer status? Because I know that's not an inexpensive thing for your multifamily broker-dealer to hold. Any idea what it is on that front?
You know, I don't know. I think it probably has to do with how many deals you're doing per year, how many registered reps are in your business. Like for our broker-dealer, we have, I believe it's 18 or 19 groups, just like Cityside Capital, that are working with this one broker-dealer. So it's a pretty large operation. And again, like we have a third-party underwriter, we have a third-party due diligence firm that we use, we have a legal firm that's retained by us for our operations. So yes, there are a lot of back-end costs. Also, depending on where your investors live, you have to be registered in each one of those states. So you could just do a blanket 50-state registration every year, or you really have to be dialed in to where are you raising capital from? And you have to be paying those fees to those states to maintain your registration.
Right. That's the beauty of being tied to a broker dealer, because you don't have to think about it.
Yes. You don't think about it.
No. And again, I'm not trying to dial in or justify what expenses you have to pay to a broker dealer, but there is a lot that's offered there, I think, on that side of it that really allows you just to go out and raise money as opposed to thinking about more the mechanics of how this is done. I love what you've said so far about why you're getting, just staying within the bounds of compliance, allowing you to sleep at night. It gives you a chance to raise money for a bunch of deals. How have your investors responded to you becoming a registered rep and then also to presenting more of a suite of sponsors as opposed to deals from Tim and Greg? Like, what's that conversation been like and how have you shifted that?
Yeah, I think it gives a lot of people a sense of comfort and confidence and clarity that we are registered, that we have licenses, that we are held to a higher standard than most people that are raising capital for whatever type of investment vehicle out there. It's a great conversation to have. And then as we grew in our business, we invested in heavily in Cityside Capital. So people appreciate that we have our own portal. So now they can go to one portal and see 10 operators and 10 deals. And instead of remembering your login credentials for 10 different portals. And then we have a nonstop deal flow, right? So we don't do every deal that comes across for whatever reason. We have the opportunity to present a lot of deals to our investors to kind of show them what are the good deals out there. Also, because we have all these resources at our disposal that we do talk about with our investors, a deal that comes to us from an operator is already underwritten. There's already debt quoted on the property. The due diligence is already done. Earnest money is already on the line. So when we get the deal, we also go through a second due diligence period where we have our underwriters go through the deal. They give us a report. Our lead broker dealers, we have two of them, they'll fly out to the property and they'll go walk the property and get a sense of it. And they'll do a site report. And then we have a due diligence firm called CrowdCheck that makes sure that all the documents are set up correctly. The LLC is set up correctly. So by the time the deal comes to our investors, it's been doubly vetted, we kind of say. And so they can be sure that there was a ton of due diligence done before we present it to them.
Right. That's awesome. And I guess the next question would be timing. Right now, getting, especially in the multifamily sector, getting deals done in a timely fashion is extremely attractive to sellers. So with those additional due diligence steps, it adds more time before you can go back to the sponsor and say, hey, Mr. Sponsor, we can bring $10 million to the table or whatever it is. How much delay does it take for that secondary layer of due diligence to get done? And has that negatively impacted your ability to move forward on the capital raise side?
Yes, we generally need 4 to 7 days of like a runway before the sponsor is going to go live with their deal. And what happens usually is that the sponsors give us a heads up. Hey, listen, we have a deal on the contract. here's what we're looking at. And we have a pretty good idea of what's in the pipeline. And then we're able to kind of tell them based on the deal, based on our investors, we have a lot of internal conversations. What kind of allocation do you think that we can come up with that our investors have appetite for and those kinds of questions. So by the time the deal comes to us, we're pretty much dialed in and the operators, there's a whole onboarding process for them. They're forking over a due diligence fee so that we can underwrite them and go through their due diligence and all their past deals. And we fly out to their properties. So by the time everything kind of comes together, everybody's really comfortable about the operators and their deals.
Right. Man, that's fantastic. I love your thinking there. I really appreciate you breaking down kind of some of the more nuanced mechanics of why you have done what you've done and just kind of how some of this functions, Tim. This is great. I love to see the explosive growth you guys have had over the last year. What does 2022, if you were to have an amazing 2022, what would it look like for you?
Man, you know what? I never thought I could think like this, but the sky is the limit. There's a lot of capital out there that's looking to get into real estate. So I'm hoping to get to maybe $20 million raised in the first maybe half of the year, if possible. And we just started our own podcast called the Passive Income Brothers Podcast. So I'm really looking forward to following in your footsteps, sir, and getting on the podcast circuit. So far, so good. So that's what we're looking at for 2022.
Tim, that's fantastic. I love just the vision, especially what you said there is you never thought you could dream this big, but the sky is the limit. Man, you're walking proof of it. Especially, I'm sure at the firehouse, guys are asking you all the time, like, Tim, what are you doing? How in the world are you doing it? And there's got to be just a little bit of pride that goes involved in that. Like, I can do it. Anybody can do it.
100%.
Yeah. So I love seeing people chase their dreams and making it happen. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first question is this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
It is my online calendar. I was always a paper and pen kind of guy. And what I found was there's so many moving parts between calendar links and calls and everything. So it's my online calendar, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. That's a game changer. Question number two, if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Don't do it yourself. Make sure you got a good team around you. And especially the most important piece is the property manager. Make sure you got a good property management company that can really perform. They have systems in place and just support them the whole way through.
Right, man. That's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Top of just, you know, investing for our own family. I just really love seeing the growth of these properties that we are involved in. We take older units, we're renovating them, we're making them nicer, we're cleaning up neighborhoods. I do enjoy watching the before and after.
Right, man. That's fantastic. Tim, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, learn more about you or Cityside Capital, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can check out our podcast, the Passive Income Brothers Podcast, or just come to our website, citysidecap.com.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate your time today. This is great.
Likewise, sir. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.